on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley, and today we have with me Justin Klein.
Always great to be here with you.
Okay, yeah, Justin does a lot of times on Mondays on by himself, and then we do it a couple days during the week together, and it's always nice to have two because then we, play
it's
off.
It's a more interesting show.
Yeah, I think so. Now, for millions of Americans, our home is an important component and a significant piece of our retirement asset. The California Association of Realtors released our market forecast for 2016 today, by the way. Now, try to remember the California Association of Realtors do have a bias. They show a continued growth in sales, but at a slower pace in 2016. And they suggest that there's going to be an affordability crisis that is brewing. And that is probably true. Mm-hmm. I don't see think about the houses up in the Bay Area and how much they've gone up. Mm-hmm. It's just.
Yeah. And affordability was actually really good back in about 2011, 12.
Yep.
And the market really took off from then. And now we're at a level back to, in a lot of areas, some areas were higher than we were back in 2006 and 7. Some were still a little bit lower, but most areas are at least near where we were.
Well,
back then.
And of course, real estate is always local, wherever, you know, especially for you people all in that Bay Area, you guys are crazy. That real estate there just insanely gone up. It has also gone up in Southern California, mm-hmm. not as much as in certain parts of Florida. It depends on where you are. It's all local.
Well, there's the Bay Area is obviously tech related.
Right.
And I think it'll be interesting because I think kind of the tech bubble 2.0 is starting to deflate. You saw that with Fidelity writing down Snapchat, and you're starting to see that that deflate a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects the real estate market up there going forward.
So if you're a baby boomer, is time to buy? Is it or time to sell? If you're a millennial, is it time to buy? That really is the question. So these are very, very important questions we have. And today we're going to have a guest to help us answer them. Chevy Atkinson is a top Orange County realtor who works with buyers, sellers, and investors. Buyers, sellers, and investors. He'll be able to help us sort out some of these questions. He's going to be on the second half of the show. So get your questions ready. How can you avoid some of the pitfalls before you buy a house? Or do you have too much house? Have you properly budgeted for a house? Any questions about real estate? Be able to answer that today. Justin has a real estate license. I have a pretty long background in real estate.
Yeah. How many rental properties have you purchased throughout the years?
Probably six or seven.
Six or seven. Okay.
Yeah. So we have knowledge there, and today we're going to have an expert on with us. So I hope you'll give us a call and call in with any of your real estate questions in the second half of the show. And, of course, we're going to weigh the advantages and disadvantages of stocks versus mutual funds versus ETFs. What is the real difference between mutual funds and ETFs? How can you actually gauge your skills as an investor? So there's a lot of things we're going to talk about today. What is on your mind? We want to hear it. Now, according to National Bureau of Economic Research, they find that people are more willing to bet on their own judgment when they feel skillful or knowledge. But the key here is they feel skillful or knowledgeable. That's the important word. It's the perception of your own competence. Usually when you're right, you think that you're more skillful or you're competent. And the more you're right, the more you feel you're skillful or competent, even though you might be just lucky.
Yeah. And male investors and those with higher incomes and more education are more likely to feel that they are competent investors. And, this is kind of that male bravado type of thing. And we see this a lot. I see this a lot with doctors.
Yeah.
Doctors, they're smart, and they have a lot of education and they make a lot of money, they're smart at being doctors. And they're not usually smart at making good financial decisions. So, I think that's a great example of that kind of male bravado thing.
So you got to be careful about that. You might be very knowledgeable. That's maybe true. But are you really? And you know, it never hurts to continue to increase your knowledge. And that's why we have that recommended book list at investtalk.com.
Nobody has enough knowledge.
Yeah, I read constantly.
Yeah, we learn all the time.
Yeah, and there's always something that's changing. Mm-hmm. The market changes over time. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It changes, and yet it's the same.
And think of the type of industries that you're investing in. You know, smartphones weren't around 20 years ago. So now smartphones, a new industry, you know, streaming media over the internet, like Netflix, that industry is new. So there's new industries coming aboard all the time that you have to be aware of and understand and know how they affect the market and economy and context.
Yeah, this leads right into that book that I really like called Creative Destruction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
it's your favorite book, right?
It's one of my favorites, yes. So ask some questions. We want to hear from you. Maybe you have superior intelligence and maybe you should be doing this show. So call in and we'll talk.
Come on in. Yeah. Maybe you should be a guest.
That's right. Our number is 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number. Let's take that question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, good morning. My name is Jeff. I'm in West LA. I'm a podcast listener. My question is, how emerging markets, local currency bond funds differ to rising interest rates compared to domestic bond funds? Basically, just want to know how the emerging market local currency fund would act to those rising interest rates. Thank you.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's more about the dollar translation. If you're kind of ignoring that part of it, because you're kind of hitting around it with rising interest rates. How does that affect emerging market and their local currency? But it's the dollar that you want to think about.
Yeah, because you know, there's a difference between local currency emerging market funds and dollar-denominated local currency or emerging market funds. Mm-hmm. Because in local currency funds, you're investing and you're owning the debt of Thailand or whatever emerging market that is in their own currency, the Thai baht. You know, as opposed to there are certain emerging markets that they can't really access the debt markets as well with their own currency because maybe it's a weak currency historically and they have to borrow in dollars, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's other types of risk with that. But so your biggest risk with local currency emerging market funds is the fluctuations in the dollar. And if interest rates are going up and they're going up because of the Fed raising rates and economy being strong, then odds are that our dollar is going to strengthen and their currency is going to weaken. So that's going to be a headwind to your returns.
So when you bring it back here to the United States, it's going to be less than you thought you were earning. Maybe you were earning 9% in the local currency bond. And you bring it back to the United States, you have to switch that Thai baht into dollars and the dollar went up in value. You didn't really get 9%. And it all goes back to the dollar. And then that goes all back to interest rates and how strong our economy is compared to theirs and what our dollar movement is doing.
Yep.
Is the dollar getting stronger or weaker? It's a complex, by the way. We've just made it very simple and very short.
I hope we made it simple.
But it's complex.
So the number one thing is understand that currency fluctuation. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't own that.
No, we're not saying that.
Yeah. It's just be aware of that type of risk that you're taking and make sure it's not too big of a portion of your portfolio, so you're not killed if the dollar, you know, skyrockets and foreign currencies really decline.
Soaring student loan debt, stagnant wage growth. It may seem like financial freedom is just a dream to many of those millennials out there. Millennials, your first steps toward financial freedom. Useful advice for millennials or anyone who knows one. That's going to be our main talking point today. So we're going to discuss that. We may get to it. I'm not sure. Healthcare and rent drive inflation, even though we don't have any inflation. But if you look at healthcare and rent all by itself, you have lots of inflation.
There is a lot. Yeah.
Lots of inflation. And I also want to talk about stop blaming retailers for holding back this stock market. Retailers really have nothing to do with it. Plus, you know, when the consumer spending, when retailers, it is such a tiny fraction of consumer spending.
Most of it's on services, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Primarily, 67% is on services, 3% consumer spending. So don't think, you know, the consumers, because the shirts.
You mean clothing and footwear is the only thing.
I'm sorry, clothing and footwear. Yeah. So don't think you're buying shirts and shoes and, you know, those stores are suffering that, oh, no, the economy is going to
The consumer spending is services and usually more big ticket items, buying cars, buying refrigerators, buying furniture, you know.
Big things.
Like you said, clothes and shoes are only 3%.
Yeah, really tiny. So don't be blaming those kinds of stores for the stock market. That's not really what's the problem. You'd help pick the topic, so why not join us tomorrow evening for our November 18th webinar? It's tomorrow night, 6:30 to 7:30, 1 hour. It's free. We just went over it today. It looks pretty interesting to me. I think you'll like it. You can register right now by going to investtalk.com.
This is Oscar from San Francisco. Thank you for your show. WPZ, Williams Partners LP. That's the one I'm asking about. Wondering if you would be buying this one, and if you would, at what price, and what do you think about it? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Williams Partners LP, WPZ, a master limited partner operating natural gas gathering systems in Texas, Louisiana, Wyoming, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. People look at these, as we've said many times, they look at these because of the dividend.
10.4% yield as of today.
Yeah, that's why people like these. They fall in love with that dividend. You're chasing the dividend. And I'm not even saying this is a bad or good stock. What I'm saying is too many people are looking at the dividend only and thinking, oh, I want that. Mm-hmm. That's not how you do it. How you do it is look at is that dividend sustainable? What are they doing to achieve to pay that high dividend? Is it overpriced? What are the fundamentals? Now, this company has a lot of debt. Its sales have been falling. A year ago, they were growing their sales 500%. Now, this most recent quarter, it's down 11%. Sales are falling. Also, there's been a lot of issuance of shares.
Yeah, it looks like their number of shares outstanding has gone from about 150 million shares in 2011 to 350 million as of today. So they've been issuing a lot of shares to pay that dividend. So their debt actually isn't crazy and it hasn't really gone up a ton, but all they're really doing is issuing more shares and paying that out as a dividend.
Yeah, so they're taking your money and then giving it back to you.
And that is not a good use of shareholder money.
That's a 100% increase in shares outstanding.
Yeah. More than that, 150 to 350, that's over 150 almost percent increase in just a few years.
So is this a good company? Probably. It looks pretty decent. They make money. You know, it's made money, always makes money, but I'm not caring for how they're paying that dividend.
Yeah, I don't like companies like that because to me that shows a poor stewardship of investor capital, a poor strategy from the leaders of the company, basically saying, it makes sense to issue more shares and then pay back those to shareholders. Pay back that money. Use that money to pay to shareholders. That doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's not sustainable over the long term. So that's why I don't like it.
One more point. It's a $32.57 stock, and they're paying over 10% yield. Mm-hmm. That means they're paying $3.25 in a dividend, and they're only going to make $1.51 next year.
Yeah, and that's projections.
How are they going
to make that? That's a 56 cents they're going to make this year.
So the money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, not a fan of it.
No. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You're listening to Invest Talk. Of course, that is our number, our anytime number. You can call it anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're open Monday through Friday. We're on live, I should say, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5. So you can call right now. We talk about risk quite a bit, risk tolerance, what's your personal risk tolerance. And just a reminder, on our website, we have a risk analysis tool. It takes just a few minutes for you to fill out the answer to the questions, and it instantly gives you a risk number between 0 and 100. And you can compare that with your portfolio. We can do that for you. If you could just go there, start the process, go take the test. And it's simple. Do it in 2 or 3 minutes. 88, I'm Steve Peasy with Justin Klein, and our number is 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. We all lose money unnecessarily. Do you know when and how? Here's how to stop wasting cash, leaving money on the table. That's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you'll be listening then.
888-99-CHART. Let's go talk to Glenn in Belmont. He wants to talk about Prexar. How you doing, Brent? Glenn, how you doing?
Good, very good. Actually, my question is about Blackstone, BX.
Oh, they BX. Put down PX. Okay, sorry about that. Here we are, Ben.
That's
reading
okay.
up. We were looking up the wrong company. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I've had this company with me for a while. I've been selling it off. It's been on. It's kind of been dropping from 44 down to in the 30 now range. I'm just wondering. They got a dividend. I wasn't sure if you talked about it earlier because I caught a little bit of your last call, but it sounded similar. They got a dividend and they're in their 30s. I'm just wondering if
there's a big difference. There's a big difference, Glenn, between this one and the LP. One is they're not borrowing money and they're not issuing shares to pay that dividend.
Well, they're borrowing money to some extent, but their share issuance is not nearly as large as the other one.
Well, they haven't, according to this, issued any new shares in the last couple of years. The other one was issuing lots of shares, more than double their shares issued. Yeah. Blackstone Group, everybody, BX, provides global alternative asset management and financial advisory services. It's going to make $2.32 this year. That's down 10% from last year. But next year, it's going to rebound to $3.43, according to the estimates.
Yeah, this is a private equity company. They're one of the biggest players in the home rental market. They bought up a lot of the cheap homes back during the recession, and they've done pretty well with it. But they also have other areas. They have hedge fund solutions. They work with hedge funds. They have hedge funds. They work in the junk bond market. So this is a high risk type of company because of the areas that they play in. Now they're fairly diversified. They have a lot of experience. But their operating history is extremely choppy.
Yeah, that means sales and earnings choppy, year to year to year. Sometimes they're a huge growth, and then they shrink.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard. Go ahead, Glenn.
So I have this company. I've been bailing out a little at a time. It's at the bottom of where they're kind of maybe bouncing from the bottom a little bit. And I'm just wondering with the seasonal market right now, as far as housing is concerned, and their interest rates going up, is there going to be an effect on all that for the short term? That's what I'm wondering.
I think so. I mean, I think this is one of the highest risk names in the market. And if we go into a recession, I think they're going to be hurt pretty bad. If you just go back to where they were last time, we were at the, they actually IPO'd right near the high in 2007. They IPO'd in July of 2007. And remember, the peak was in about October, November of 2007. And they went from a high of about $29 a share, and they almost went close to not bankrupt, but they were down to $3 a share. So that's a very dramatic drop. So it's a very high-risk name, and if we go into recession, it's going to go much, much lower.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Millennials, your first step towards financial freedom. Well, what does that mean? Millennials have been very slow to buy houses. They've been buried in student debt, so they've been trying to get out of that. But that doesn't mean you, as a millennial, you don't invest in the market. You don't invest in your future. You still have to do it. Easiest way to do that is through your work. Most of them are working, and most of them have a 401k option. You got to max that out. Especially if your employer is matching you with funds, especially if that's true. And then once you do that, then you got to go beyond that and even save more in your 401k.
Yeah, so, you can't just a lot of people just rely on that match. And usually that match is only the first few percentage points, right? So 3-4%. And say you get that match, you double it, now you're up to in the high single digits. Well, most financial advisors, including ourselves, would say you should be saving anywhere from 12 to 15% of your take-home pay, of your gross pay. So make sure that you don't just say, okay, I'm going to do the full match and that's it. One great strategy is, say you get a raise. And most people get a raise every year of some percentage. Take half of that and put it away. So you're still getting a raise, your take-home pay is higher, but you're also increasing your savings in your 401k every time you do get a raise, and you don't really feel it.
Yeah, the maximum you can put away now, I think, is what, $18,000 a year?
Yeah, $18,000 plus $6,000 catch-up
if you're 50.
Over the age of 50.
But
exactly.
younger people have a lot more time to grow this money. The sooner you start, the much better off you'll be. Mm-hmm.
So if you get a 4% raise, increase your deferral by 2%, and in effect, you'll get a 2% raise from a take-home perspective.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up next half hour, is your home going to appreciate? Is it significantly over the next few years? We're going to ask somebody. Should you downsize? What are the rates going to be in 2016? We're going to talk to Chevy Atkinson, a top Orange County realtor. He's an investor, realtor, buys and sells, one of the top rated there. So get your real estate questions ready, everybody. 888-99-CHART.
As we get back to Invest Talk, a reminder to register for our free Invest Talk webinar. It's coming up tomorrow, November 18th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Building a strong portfolio with less risk and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. Get your free link to the webinar right now on investtalk.com.
It's time to talk real estate, everybody. Online with us right now from Orange County office is Chevy Atkinson. Chevy has been the number one agent out of 1,000 agents at Evergreen Realty for the last 4 years in a row. Now, he's a real estate investor himself, so he puts his money where his mouth is, investing in properties outside of California and all around the country. So we want to talk with him about investing in real estate. Welcome, Chevy. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me. Well, I want to invest in cookie butter goodness and avocado and bacon.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. That was a reference to our commercial that he was
doing. Yeah, I know. Let's start off with Justin. I know you have some couple of questions. I'll pipe in also. So go ahead, Justin.
So, you know, Steve just talked about how you're the number one agent out of about 1,200 agents in Evergreen. And what's the key to your success? You know, you've 4 years running. That's pretty impressive. So what is it?
Yeah, actually today I was named for the sixth year in a row. We just had a little brunch and they announced that it's actually 6 years in a row now since 2009. So,
Wow. You
know, I think a big part of my success is during the last bubble, you know, in 06, 07, we were telling people, you know, not to buy real estate. The financing that people was using was unsustainable and that it was creating a bubble and that they'd be much better off waiting until that bubble burst to buy properties.
So, yeah, which is a lot of what we were saying here on air back then as well.
Yeah. I sold all my rentals in 2004, about a year or so too soon, and I had them for 20 years. So,
well, that was smart, though. I mean, 03, 04 would have been the top of the market if they hadn't come out with the NAGAM loan.
Exactly.
And so a lot of my smartest clients, a lot of my investor friends of mine, that's when they were selling, because who would have projected the NAGAM loan? You know, further than Ninja Loan, no income, no job, no assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're going to give you a loan that you don't even have to even completely pay down the principal. It's actually going to grow every month. So
I thought that was crazy.
It just made no sense. It was absolutely crazy. So it was pretty easy to project that bubble. But we have some really good analytics now, so we're really, really able to tell people, you know, where the market is and where there's still opportunity.
So you, I'm assuming you were telling a lot of your clients to sell back then. So what are some keys to helping your clients get the top dollar for their home?
Well, so the first thing, and you know, a lot of agents just don't spend the right amount of time on this. You got to make sure the home shows well. So, you know, we have professional designers. We come in usually at least for a couple of hours and make suggestions. But then on top of that, you know, tens or even hundreds of hours can be spent just simple stuff that usually you get really good bang for your buck. You know, we have to analyze it and see if it's going to be a good return on investment, but painting is usually one thing that really returns. A new carpet is often a good return. You know, sometimes we'll go as far as even redo kitchens and bathrooms, but it really just depends on the property, the neighborhood, what's going on in the market. And, you know, I think Justin, you and I were speaking the other day, and you said, you know, can you compare the market for me between Northern California and Southern California? And I think I said, no, there's no way I can compare Southern and Northern California, because even within each market, there's so many different sub-markets. Mm-hmm. I mean, even within different cities within Orange County and within different tracts within those cities, the market can be doing something, you know, relatively different and sometimes vastly different. So we take each property and we look at and analyze based upon what the market conditions are telling us, what the comps are, and what's going on in that particular market.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chevy, I know you're helping out one of our clients with selling their high-end home, and we won't talk about who that is or anything like that, but we know that you went out there, you took a look at the property, you made suggestions of what they do to try to maximize those properties. So is it a good time, if you're nearing retirement, that you're looking to maybe downsize, to is it a good time to sell now?
Yeah, so there's two sides of that coin, right? So you got to look at the buy side, and you also got to look at the sell side. So what I'm telling people is, if you're looking to buy a property and you're looking to hold that property for long term, you know, ideally for the term of the loan, it's not a bad time to buy if you don't have a lot of cash and you're definitely going to take a loan. The biggest advantage to buying today is how low the interest rates are. Mm-hmm. So let's flip that around, and your question is it a good time to sell? If you have a lot of cash on a property and you know and you have a property, for instance, your client, that property is just way too big for him, right? He needs to downsize.
Right.
He can make way more money, because if he takes that cash and invests it with you guys and puts it somewhere else, then if that property is money is locked up in that property, right? Mm-hmm. So what you also have to do, and what a lot of people fail to do, is to look at opportunity cost.
Yep.
You know, I have another client that has a property on the peninsula in Newport Beach, and they're trying to decide if they want to sell, and all they're looking at in their costs is they're looking at their HOA fee and their property taxes. But that's not their true cost.
Mm-hmm.
They have $1 million sitting there in this little condo that they don't really go to very often, that they don't really want, but they're not so sure if they want to sell it or not, because it's only costing them, I think they told me, like, because their tax basis was low, like $1,500 a month or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, well, this costs you a lot more than $1,500 a month, because you have $1 million locked in that property. And if you go to a good investment advisor, they're going to make you 6 to 10%, maybe even more. You tell me, Justin.
Yeah.
Right? So there's another $100,000 a year that they weren't even thinking about,
mm-hmm.
that's locked in the property, that in my opinion, since they know they want to sell it relatively soon and they need the cash flow, why not sell and release that equity and invest it wisely, right?
Yeah, that opportunity cost is huge. I think people really don't understand. And, you know, we're on the topic of price. You know, prices in California, according to the California Association of Realtors, are up about 2.5% year over year. So not, you know, not huge, but decent. And, you know, you talked about how the opportunity cost, and I think you would agree that, you know, in the short to medium term, the upside in the real estate market is probably somewhat limited after so many years of gains, and the fact that interest rates are low, and now the Fed is looking to raise interest rates, you know, probably could happen in December, if not probably early part of next year. What type of impact do you see that having on the market?
Well, so this goes back. I mean, everybody's situation is different, but, you know, what I like to tell people, and it's true, if you're putting 20% down and interest rates go from 4 to 5%, the difference in cost of ownership for you, that property, is about 17%, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the prices are going to go down 17%, because people that have been buying lately have been taking very stable, very good financing,
mm-hmm.
and people that have owned for a long time have refinanced into super low rates. So the flip side of the coin, though, is the banks did a lot of loan modifications, and that's the X factor.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those loan modifications are going to come back? Because they kicked the can down the road pretty good.
Yeah.
My thought is, in Orange County, if we start to see that, they're just going to kick the can back down the road again.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where the supply is going to come from to make prices drop a bunch. But I do think for people that are putting less than the average down in whatever area they're in, cost of ownership is only going to continue to rise.
Mm-hmm.
for and, people that are sitting on the sideline that have a lot of cash, you want the rates to go up. Mm-hmm. You want some downward pressure on prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, become more of a buyer's market as opposed to right now, which is kind of a seller's market, you know, kind of, I guess, weakening to a certain extent, right?
Exactly. There's so many different sub-markets within Orange County. So,
of course.
We just had a condo that we listed, and we had 15 offers within a week. People were fighting over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it went for, you know, essentially top dollar. We have other properties over $1 million that, you know, we have to put a little bit more work and time in, and we have to wait for the right buyer to come sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, like we've talked about, Justin, we have a lot of foreign buyers that come with our marketing. Our team speaks 7 different languages. So, for example, one of them that's been sitting there for a while, we just had a buyer that I think they're going to send an offer that just came in from Shanghai. So sometimes you have to wait for that buyer to enter the market or to come visit, mm-hmm. and then that's when you sell it.
And,
you know?
And so based on if your property is worth, like you said, $1 million+, you probably want to be a little more proactive on getting that listed if you're thinking about selling soon. Whereas if it's a lower priced piece of property, those will probably be more in demand no matter the market. Correct.
And because of the amount of work that we put into listings before they ever hit the market,
mm-hmm.
we really recommend that people contact us at least 6 months before they're thinking about selling,
mm-hmm.
so that we can really look at their property. We can give them advice on what needs to get done so they can take some time and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes people, you know, very few people can put in $10,000 and make an extra 40, right?
Yeah.
That condo that I just told you about, that's exactly what's going to happen on that deal. We brought our carpet guy in, we brought our painter in, and they literally are going to make an extra $40,000. They put about 10 into, you know, actually we did some tile work and our handyman did some work too, but they spent less than $10,000 and they're literally getting an extra $40 back. You know, that's the other thing that we do is we'll buy properties that are on the market. We'll go in, we'll put 10, 20, 30, how much ever it needs in, and we'll make a good amount of profit. We help to show our clients how to do that as well. So,
Jamie, I have a question. Is on a higher end home, in the higher end home, is the market as strong as it is in the medium priced homes, or is it weaker?
Yeah, you know, I would say, I mean, coastal, like Laguna Beach, Newport Beach, coastal communities are very, very strong still.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, again, there's so many sub markets. But then, like, let's say you take a $1 million plus home in Lake Forest. There's very few $1 million plus homes in Lake Forest. That one's probably going to take a little bit longer to sell, right?
Okay.
You can take a $1 million plus property in Newport Beach or Laguna Beach. It's still, depending on what your definition of high-end is, it's still relatively high-end. You know, it's probably still the top 1 or 2% of the population that can buy a property like that. And it'll sell like it's a cheap condo. It'll sell super quick because that's a cheap price for that market. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. I understand. I was also thinking of the Bay Area where a lot of our listeners are, that a $1 million property is not high-end up there.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
The Bay Area is on fire. You know, we actually get a good amount of our buyers lately from the Bay Area as well. There's a ton of money in the Bay Area right now.
Yeah, and I know
are selling extremely quickly.
Yeah, I know Steve was talking, told me one story about how he was visiting a client up there a few months ago. And, you know, it was a normal house, right? And you sit down and you do normal assessment of their financial situation. You ask, well, how much is your home worth? And I think what they say, $1.2 million.
Yeah. And it was built in the 1960s on a really small lot, an old single-story ranch, what, maybe 1,100, 1,200 square feet.
Yeah.
Location.
It's all down in the San Jose area.
All location. Yeah.
Now, some of our listeners may not be privy to the real estate market, don't have a lot of education when it comes to real estate. So, but what are some common mistakes that you see from not only young buyers, but also maybe older people approaching retirement, some of the mistakes that they make when it comes to approaching real estate on the buy side and the sell side?
Well, you know, you already touched on, I think one of the biggest things is that's just not recognizing missed opportunity costs, right? Mm-hmm. Having a property where you have a bunch of equity tied up, you don't need that big of a property. You know, you have a bunch of cash, but it's all locked into the property. And saying, well, you know, it's super cheap for me to live here because I bought it so long ago and my taxes are low and I don't have an HOA fee or my HOA fee is low or whatever it is. And not realizing that if you have $1, $2, $3, $4 million locked up in a property, the opportunity cost you're losing by not investing that money is huge. You know, there's other things, you know, most of them will take a little bit longer stories. I'm not sure how much time we have, but having an agent that recognizes and understands financing is hugely valuable. My brother buys investment properties. I'll just try to summarize his story. And he came to me and said, look, I'm buying this property. Here's my interest rate, and it's going to be fixed for 5 years. I said, whoa, hold on. You're getting a five-year fixed loan at only at 5%? Why? You know, it was a single-family home. You should be getting a 30-year loan at closer to 4%. He said, you know, because they're giving me a commercial loan because my agent told me to buy it at my corporation, so I have corporate protection. Absolutely, put your property in the corporation, but buy it as a person under your own name first. Get a good 30-year fixed loan at 4%, and then quit claim it into your corporation after you close.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
I mean, difference, if you go from, like I said, 4 to 5% interest rate, that's a tens of thousands of dollars over the life of owning, not to mention the unknown of where the rate's going to go, right, in 5 years.
Yeah, I think that's super crucial to understand. And quickly, can you also talk a little bit about the investing side of real estate? I know that you invest a lot in Florida and other states as well. And what kind of opportunities you see outside of California?
So yes, I'm a huge proponent of cash flow investing. So as a quick and dirty rule, what I look for in general is properties in nice areas, you know, 8s, 9s, 10s, probably in the low end 7s for schools. And so in A and B areas. And then what I look for is I want the rent, 1 month's rent, to be about 1% of the purchase price. So for example, if I have a $150,000 property, I want to be able to rent that property for close to $1,500. So here in Orange County, right, if we're looking at a property that's, say, $800,000, that property is probably only going to rent for about $3,000.
Yeah, in California, there are a few of those opportunities, right? Yeah, in California, generally, there's few of those opportunities.
So, yeah, so for example, I mean, I just bought a property for $155,000, my mortgage, taxes, insurance, everything, I want to say it's like $780. And I rented out for $1,400 a month, you know, and I could probably get closer to $15 I rented it during last Christmas. So,
well, Chevy, we really, really appreciate you. We've been speaking with Chevy Atkinson of Evergreen Realty. It's Chevy, thanks for the insight. Really, we appreciate it. How about if our listeners have questions that they want to ask you directly, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can call my cell direct anytime, 949-769-1599. They may also want to check out our blog, ochousingnews.com. Well, again, that's ochousingnews.com.
They also can call us, obviously. You can call our listener line, 888-99-CHART, or get in touch with us, and we'll get you in touch with Chevy. Chevy, thank you very much for being with us. You're listening to Invest Talk. We'll be right back.
Our podcast distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Our next free webinar is coming up tomorrow, November 18th. Steve and Justin hope you'll join them for Building a Strong Portfolio with Less Risk and Finding Strong Dividend-Paying Stocks. The date again is November 18th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free. You just sign up right now on investtalk.com.
We're here to answer your questions, everybody. Real estate questions, stock questions, 401k kind of questions, anything financial. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Brandon Higginbotham in St. Augustine, Florida. I have a question about ticker symbol BBL for BHP Billiton. Been watching them lately, and they've had a major decrease in their share price, and it's really driven the dividend yield up. I think it's around 8 or 9% now, and I know this is tied to commodities, so from a long-term perspective, my thought process is that as commodities come back, their earnings are going to increase. My main concern, though, is that dividend safe, or do you feel like with their balance sheet that they're going to, based upon their earnings, if commodity prices do not increase anytime soon, that they'll have to cut that dividend? That's kind of the determining factor here, whether I make the move on it, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, this company is BHP Billiton. BBL is the symbol. It's an Australian company engaged in the mining, metallurgical, and energy, coal, iron ore, oil, gas, manganese, and base metals. So it's in the mining industry. And, you know, the stock has fallen sharply from over what, $65 or so, $70. Now today is trading at 26. Mm-hmm. And but you also remember, don't, because something's fallen that far, don't make the assumption that, well, now it's cheap, I need to buy it.
Yeah.
Stocks aren't cheap just because of the price that they are. Mm-hmm. They're always cheap or expensive in relationship to the earnings. And, of course, the earnings have collapsed too.
Yeah, and obviously this is down a lot because of commodity prices. And generally they're a coal miner. They have diversified over the years, like Steve said, into oil and natural gas and iron ore and some base metals. But it's really being dragged down because of coal. Coal is really out of favor. There's a lot of oversupply because of China. China's cutting back on their use, A, because their pollution there is just terrible, and B, because they just don't need to use as much coal because their economy is not growing as fast, and they're kind of diversifying away from manufacturing. So that is why coal is just really oversupplied in here in America, where natural gas is so cheap that a lot of factories are switching to natural gas because it's cleaner and in a lot of cases cheaper. So really it's being dragged down by that. So the BHP Billiton, the good part is that they don't have a lot of debt, especially for a coal miner. There's a lot of coal companies that are struggling. A few have gone bankrupt already. A few are struggling and could go bankrupt here in the near future. And they don't have a giant amount of debt.
Now,
so that's
sales,
a positive.
Sales have been falling sharply quarter over quarter over quarter. Mm-hmm. Earnings have gone from $5 a share plus in 2014 to 80 cents in 2016 mm-hmm. per share. That's why it's been falling.
And
so
now their payout ratio, you talked about the dividend, whether that 9.4% yield is safe. Their payout ratio is 190%.
So they can't keep that up.
Yeah. So in the short term, they can keep it up. But if it sustains this level of earnings, you know, below a dollar a share for an extended period of time, they're certainly going to have to cut that dividend.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, thanks for the call. BBL is a symbol, BHP Billiton Mining Company. Appreciate that. Healthcare and rent drive inflation. Now, we've had inflation numbers out today, and there's virtually no inflation, or very, very little inflation. But there are two major expense areas of the average citizen, you and me, that is seeing a lot of inflation, and that's healthcare and rent. That's about 3%. 3% annual rate for those. Every place else, we're talking, you know, what, 2%, 1.9% last 12 months. So that's very, very low inflation. But we still have but it's just very low. Mm-hmm. So the question we have is, for you and me, is there inflation? For instance, the government, the way they count inflation is not very good. The cost of housing and medical care, as I said, has gone up. But you know they count, even though gasoline prices have gone up a little bit at a certain point, they still count as going down. How they count things is very unusual.
And they don't use what – my biggest thing is they use rents. I don't like the fact they use rents only because most people want to buy. And if housing prices go up 20% and the rent stays the same, well, there's no inflation according to the government.
According to the government.
Yeah.
How they count rent inflation is very odd sometimes.
Yeah.
Our hour's up, everybody. Both Justin and I, thank you very much for being with us this hour. I'm Registered Investment Advisor Steve Peasley, and of course, I'm with Justin Klein today, who's also a Registered Investment Advisor. And we own and manage KPP Financial, and we want to thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again tomorrow on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.